Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with
Sam Mendes,
Christy Wilson-Cairns,
who are the director and writer, respectively, of the new awesome war movie, 1917. Thanks so much for joining us, and congrats on the Golden Globe nods and everything. I want to start off by the little thing you flashed right before the end credits. It actually made my wife tear up, but the grandfatherly connection here, because when you make something personal, obviously it carries so much more weight. But take our listeners into how, you know, when you flash that name Mendes, of why that means, why a World War One movie means so much to you.
Well, notice that that you blame the crying on your wife. That's what all the men do.
Yeah. I was
next to a woman who was crying. I was totally dry eye. The film is dedicated to my grandfather, Alfred, who fought in the First World War, enlisted at the age of 17, and told us when I was probably 11 or 12, the stories of his exploits in that war. He'd never spoken of it at all, didn't speak of it to his own children. But for whatever reason, by the time he got to his 70s, he was obviously ready to tell people. And it was an extravagant array of stories. He was there for a long time. He won two medals. He was gassed. He went back home. He was injured. But all the stories were not about heroism or bravery particularly. They were all about how fortunate he was and the number of coincidences it took for him to remain living by the end of the war. But he told one particular story about having to carry a message across no man's land in the mists. And it was that image of that one little man, he was very small, alone in that vast, misty emptiness that stuck with me. And when I came to have the courage to sit down and write, that was the story I felt compelled to tell. And then I got it into a kind of form of a treatment. And then my good friend and collaborator, Christy, here actually helped me put it into a script because, you know, that was beyond me. I sort of froze at that point. And then it became a true collaboration because she brought an enormous amount to the table. But it all started with that image of my grandfather.
Awesome. And of course, it's the... I want to get into the directorial, visual, cinematography, of doing it all in one, you know, the illusion of one single take. But just from a script level, you know, Christy, you get this treatment. Was the concept of doing it as a single take there from the beginning? And then how are you then trying to flesh it? You know, is it a lot more of a action lines on a page than a typical thing? Or what's it like fleshing it out? Like, how do you write that into a screenplay for a single shot movie?
Writing a screenplay for a single shot movie is rather difficult. I'm made considerably easier by the fact that, you know, Sam was my co-writer, and that he is, you know, a real, to use the term very literally, an absolute visionary. This script just would not have been possible without someone who had the imagination to render a whole film on the page. And so, yeah, what it has to be, instead of a traditional script, which is a roadmap, this script had to be the destination. It had to read like the final film. And that required Sam and I just giving 110% every day, which we did, and I'm very pleased with the finished article. Rather narcissistically, I think it's wonderful.
Awesome. Did you do, when you set out to do something like that, did you research other single take? I mean, obviously they did Birdman a couple years ago. There's Russian Ark. What was that? Victoria was that one. And then with Lea Costa. And then, of course, Rope, Hitchcock's. Do you go back and look at some of those and say, oh, you know, Hitchcock would mask it when their canister would run out on someone's black jacket and then they'd swipe across? Or, you know, I mean, did you research other single shot movies?
Well, I'd seen most of those when they came out. And
not Rope. Yeah, you're a little too young for that.
No, I didn't see Rope when I came out. I'm nearly old enough to have seen Rope when it came out. I didn't look excessively at it. I thought it was pretty straightforward. Talked a lot to the visual effects department about how we might, you know, how we might do it in unconventional ways. And some of those stitches, and for those people who are listening who don't understand what I mean, you're really shooting the movie in long continuous takes, which then get stitched together to appear as if they're one long shot.
How many stitches?
but that I couldn't possibly reveal to you. But not many. Sometimes what causes that is you're shifting locations. You know, you're having to, and for those who haven't seen it, you have to imagine one long 2-hour single set, really. That, you know, if you write No Man's Land followed by a German dugout, followed by a quarry, woods, hills, orchards, farmhouses, roads, that's all very well, but they all have to happen exactly the right moment in the script. The scene can't be longer than the land, and the land can't be longer than the scene. So that meant rehearsing for months and months on empty fields and only digging the trenches and building the farmhouses and the orchards and the quarries once we knew exactly how long the journey was. So it was a job it was a real job of engineering and a kind of group effort from the very beginning. And I think that, you know, for me, that's the most remarkable technical achievement from the crew, is that rather than the stitching the shots together. The stitching the shots together is actually, once you've planned it and thought about it, not that complicated. There were a couple that gave us a real headache. But beyond that, I think actually that, weirdly, even though it was one of the first things we talked about incessantly, is probably the thing we talk about least now. And I think a lot of, in certain occasions, even I've forgotten that there are blends in certain points and have to remind myself. But there's a lot of focus on, you can focus too much on the how of it all and not on the why. And the why is because I wanted that unbroken relationship between the camera and the characters. And because it's a race against time, and in a race against time, you really do feel every second ticking down with the men as they try to, you know, get to where they need to get to. And then the other challenge is this dance between camera and characters and landscape that has to be evolving and changing all the time. So it doesn't become monotonous or repetitive. It expresses lots of different things within the same shot: geography, distance, physical difficulty, and also gets quite intimate and connected to the characters. And it's that combination of the two that was the most tricky to achieve. It was an unusual film in almost every respect.
How about in terms of a little more technical, you know, with Deakins, cinematographer, you know, he must be fighting light, you know? When you shoot a regular movie, you're trying to get the best light. And here, you know, if cloud cover comes over, then it's not going to match the continuous shot, you know? So just talk about some of the challenges with that and how Roger and yourself, you know, were able to navigate that visually. Well, keep it uniform, you know, for that immersive
experience. Yeah, we had to keep it as a single continuity. Therefore, we decided we didn't want to shoot in sunshine. So a lot of the time we were waiting for the sun to go in, or heavy rain, obviously. It can't start raining in the middle of a shot, sort of go from sunny to a downpour and all that sort of stuff. So it has to be a continuity. But we were in England, so we were never far away from cloudy weather. but, you know, you also want this sort of accidental feeling to a lot of stuff. You want it to be planned but not overly controlled. You want the camera to have precision, but you want the actors to have spontaneity and to feel like life and not pre-planned, not robotic. You know, you don't want it to feel like every step has been rehearsed to the nth degree. So you want little accidents, you want the light changing, you want things unexpected, gusts of wind and animals and babies and things that don't perform exactly as you imagine. And there are two or three key moments where you know, George playing Schofield gets knocked off his feet at one point. That wasn't planned. You know, that was an accident, but it has the feeling of reality because, you know, in a way, it almost was. When you're working in 9-10 minute takes, you know, you are encouraging them to live as much as to act.
Absolutely. And in terms of, you know, when you're writing the script too, you know, I don't want to spoil anything for viewers, but let's just say, You do an admirable job of planting certain elements, like maybe there'll be cow's milk that might come in handy later, or you know what I mean? There's different, you know, you have to write this thing that's going to be, everyone's going to be talking about it, this visual masterpiece. But talk about sort of how you're trying to set up those character beats too, and how, you know, a run-in, you know, with a woman with a baby, or a run-in, you know, how it's important to plant those little things along the way that shows a character growth.
Well, it's tricky because the film has to feel like reality. It has to feel like, you know, 115 minutes in someone else's life. And so as storytellers, Sam and I realised we could only push reality so far before an audience would reel back and go, oh, I don't believe this would all take place over one day. I don't believe this would all take place over one life. And so there's a tightrope you have to walk. And so you're trying to craft a narrative, but at the same time, you're trying to appear totally invisible. So, and actually, that was sort of a theme throughout. Every technical aspect of this movie, from the script, you know, all the way through to the edit, and past that, was incredibly challenging, but we were never trying to be self-advertising across the board. We actually wanted you to forget you were watching a film. So you never feel Samurai's hands moving the narrative. You never feel necessarily Roger moving the camera, and I don't think you feel the editing, but all of those things were working in concert to build the story.
I want to know how you got that, the shot where they jump off and it goes underwater. How is that even achieved? Like, is the cameraman on a harness, or is there like a special crane that goes down in the water? Like, seriously, I want to know from directing, like, how do you even achieve that? Or is that like a magician revealing the trick?
Yeah, it is a little bit like you know, ignore that man behind the curtain, as he says in The Wizard of Oz. So, I would definitely ignore the man behind the curtain on that one. But, you know, there's sleights of hand, there's skillful visual effects, there's rigs, you know, descender rigs, bungees, a very brave actor, a real river, you know, all these things thrown in. And also timing, you know, it has to happen in a way that you don't quite prepare yourself for it. So it's almost over before you realize it's happened. So sometimes it's about choosing your moment within the narrative to do it. So that you're not over prepared for it, and I learned a little bit of that on Bond as well. You know, that sense of taking the audience by surprise.
It's the best Daniel Craig one, by the way. Yeah. Skyfall.
Well, thank you very much. But I think that was you know, something I learned. Along with not to be afraid of a few big bangs.
Well, I know they're giving me the go home, but really quick, 20th anniversary of American Beauty. How much have you, I mean, you were doing some really cool stuff with populating the symbolic red petals behind the, you know, in a lot of the shots, but talk about, and just memories of that real quick, and, you know, just how you think you've grown, because that was your first big Oscar winning, you know, foray, and 20 years later, you're now constructing single takes, man. I mean, you've won the greatest directors that we have going now. So just memories that real fast.
Well, thank you very much for that. My memories are almost all positive. It was one of those very unusual experiences. Normally, as a director, you realize that there's no correlation, there's no link between the pleasure you have doing something and how good it is. Sometimes you have a great experience and it's terrible. But equally, so you have a terrible experience and the movie can work out, or the play can work out really well. But this was one of those rare ones where I actually enjoyed it. I think the thing that still strikes me is how it wasn't expected to be anything at all. I mean, I remember the LA fall preview of all the movies coming out in the fall, the LA Times fall preview, and I was like so excited, where's my movie? And they forgot it. It wasn't even in it at all, you know?
Because it should have been alphabetical for
it. Just exactly. It just wasn't on the radar, you know. And I think for that movie, you know, to end up doing what it did was something that probably never happened again. But yeah, I look back with fondness.
Yeah. And you'll always have Paul Newman's last on-screen role, not the Pixar thing, but on-screen in Road to Perdition. So, hey, I know we got to go. So thanks so much for joining us. And I'm pulling for this movie hard this award season. I really do. I think we have something special here. So maybe another Best Director down the line. So thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.